Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Wyba, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Need No Mask because he's spooky already, Williams.
That's incredibly mean.
Coming back to form.
Yeah, I think you're overshooting there.
We got a special episode as we are not alone. Intern Amy is taking the night off, and in her stead are our entire Junior Filmlosopher crew. We got Junior Filmlosopher Sarah over here.
Hello!
And we got Junior Filmlosopher Logan.
Hola.
And he speaks Spanish, so there you go. We got a great show in store, as literally everybody at this table is a fan of horror, and we are going to be talking about the recently dropped Scott Derrickson film, The Black Phone. So stick around for that as we dive deep into that story and our opinions and our thoughts and everything else in between. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check out all of our 300 alleged episodes over at our website at filmlosophers.com. We got everything from action, anime, romance. We got rom-coms. We got everything. Anything that you're looking for, we got it. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Also check us out on our socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We got some great stuff there, including the announcement at the end of this podcast for the giveaway we are doing this month. And I have still yet to tell Spencer what that is.
I know. I just realized.
Yeah, we got a great giveaway at the end of the show. Make sure you stick around so that you can learn the details of how you can enter. You can also check us out on anywhere where podcasts are streaming: iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Listen to us. Find us there, The Filmlosophers. Give us a subscribe, and listen to what we got to say, and give us a 5-star review. So, but like I said, we got a great show in store, and what seems to be becoming a little bit of the norm, we got a little bit of movie news. And in this particular this particular episode, we got some interesting stuff because of the fact that we are huge fans of the film Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Logan is still working his way into that club. So Junior Filmlosopher Sarah is taking note and finding where the weak points are. At the end of the episode, there's going to be a death match for the two. We're going to throw in some bat lifts, you know, some of the...
Place your bets now.
Yeah. So in lieu of that film, the creators, the filmmakers themselves are releasing the bonus content in lieu of the DVD/Blu-ray release, including a very particular scene that I'd say the best way to describe it is it fits in with the movie.
It does.
We honestly just have four words for you, and that is spaghetti baby noodle boy. If you get a chance, head on over to YouTube, obviously, after you listen to this, and check out, or you know what, heck, I don't even care, you can pause the podcast right here, go check it out, and then come back, and then you'll know what we're
don't
talking
tell
about
people there's a pause button. They might not make it back.
But if you press the pause button, you stop breathing, so you have to be quick. Yeah, we get serious here. This is one of those movies that just really moves you, and it really does a number on the whole idea of multiverse concepts. Mm-hmm. And when we first saw this film, well, when Spencer and I and intern Amy went to go, we were invited to go see it at the IMAX, we were literally blown away. And honestly, I think it's safe to say that this movie has ruined other multiverse films for us.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to put it.
Looking at you, Strange.
Sarah's actually seen it, and I don't think we've ever heard your thoughts on it.
It was really breathtaking, and it fit so well, and they used the concept of the multiverse very well, and it didn't jump a bunch where you couldn't follow the story and understand what basically is going on and relate to the characters, which is amazing.
Got that, Logan? She read from the script. She knows what she's saying.
No comment.
No comment. So this particular scene is one of many pieces of content that they're releasing slowly as they are getting closer and closer to the date of the Blu-ray release. This scene is really something else. It's the title in itself gives it away. Spaghetti Baby Noodle Boy. I really don't know how to explain it.
Well, I mean, there's a part where Evelyn is having a bit of a breakdown and says some random names of like Spaghetti Baby Noodle Boy, and then gets sent into a universe where she is talking to her Spaghetti Baby Noodle Boy, who is a different noodle than all the other noodles in the pot, and he's having questions about being a man, which I don't know what that means in terms of a noodle.
Oh, I haven't the slightest. Yeah. I have no idea. But it's interesting because it fits within the framework of everything else that this movie has come to be. Mm-hmm. In its artistic form, in its fun and silly form, in its ability to become surreal at certain points and kind of on the nose at other points. This movie is literally everything and nothing all at the same time. This is the equivalent of Seinfeld in this modern age. It's about nothing and everything all at once. And the fact remains is that this movie still, much like how Seinfeld during its time held everybody's attention, this movie still holds people's attention in the best of ways. The Blu-ray and DVD copy actually drop today, July 5th, right? Today's the 5th? Today's
yes.
The 5th.
Yes.
We're recording this on the 5th. Don't tell your mom. the Blu-ray and DVD release on today, so if you head into your Walmarts, your Best Buys, your Amazonians, your Targets, Tarjays for Tar-J. Those people, you can actually buy your own personal, physical copy, which, I mean, I'm looking at some of these things. They got, like, steelbook versions of these. They got, like, souped up massive 4K UHD Blu-ray Dolby Atmos versions on, over here. I'm like, wow. I don't know if I need that much stuff.
It's fancy.
It is fancy.
You need that much stuff when you have all that equipment.
I mean,
paid thousands for it, you're gonna get it.
Exactly. So, like I said, if you haven't had a chance to check out this film, it is still on streaming, available in digital. It's been on digital since May 17th, so we have been lucky enough to watch it since then. Yeah. Everyone else who does not subscribe to digital, you're barely going to get a chance to see it outside of the theater starting today. So check it out, and yeah. But that transitions us over to our second piece of news, which is, I think, pretty big, and that is Jordan Peele has finally explained what his latest film, Nope, is all about. Now, obviously, if you haven't been living under a rock, Logan, have you seen the trailers to Nope?
Yeah, of course.
So what do you think the movie's about?
Aliens.
Right? In the simplest of terms, it looks like it's about aliens. But on the deeper level, apparently, Jordan Peele says Nope is about, quote, our addiction to spectacle. Which does speak a lot towards the next level, if you will, of like social commentary in this day and age. I mean, you have bringing awareness, and then you have the obvious awareness of the world around you, and now you have the actual gawking, if you will, or the addiction to just focusing on all the spectacle. Jordan Peele spoke to Empire online and stated, I started off wanting to make a film that would put an audience in the immersive experience of being in the presence of a UFO, he says. But the idea grew even further from there into a broader meditation. He said, I wanted to make a spectacle, something that would promote my favorite art form and my favorite way of watching that art form, the theatrical experience. As I started writing the script, I started to dig into the nature of spectacle, our addiction to spectacle, and the insidious nature of attention. So that's what it's about. And it's about a brother and sister and healing their relationship. So with that, I mean, that says a lot, especially for somebody like Jordan Peele, who is not one to mince his words and really kind of, you know, get lost in the fluff of talking about his movies. Spence, what do you think in terms of spectacle do you think we'll get out of this movie here?
Just judging from the trailer alone, I'm imagining we're going to get some really just awesome shots of things happening. Because, like, you know, the trailer ends with, like, a UFO chasing down a guy on a horse. I'm like, that looks amazing. So I think we're going to see, like, lots of amazing shots. I'm just curious on how, like, that's all going to tie together into what he's trying to, like, what the secondary message of the movie is.
What about you, Logan? What do you think?
I mean, I the only Jordan Peele film I've seen is Get Out, which, that is an incredible film.
It is. It is a very incredible film.
It is.
It's there's a lot to unpack when you see any of his trailers, and you're like, okay, I could half assume what this may mean to me now or what it should be translated to if you see the film. But usually when it comes to Jordan Peele, especially with Get Out or Us, it's usually not. And it's usually something else different and entirely left field. I don't know. This is one of those movies where you almost become afraid to want to go see it because it with the trailers, it looks like it's a little on the nose. So you're like, oh, alien movie. Okay, that's where he's going. Close Encounters, you know, Fire from the Sky, you know, or whatever. All those alien movies.
Cowboys versus Aliens.
Alien, Aliens. You feel like you've seen most of these movies, so you feel like, you know, that's the direction he's probably going to be pulling from and so forth. And so you kind of feel almost like, to a sense, kind of let down. You're like, okay, well, I've seen this before. I know what's going on. But then it's Jordan Peele, and you got to remember, it's like he doesn't play by the books. It looks like he's playing by the books. You know, you think, oh, it's just a racist family, and the guy, you know, the boyfriend just finds out that they're just really racist at the end of the film. No, they want to take his brain, and, you know, and then there's a whole, like, subsection of thinking there. This is one of those ones where I'm almost to the level of, like, I think I have an idea, but there's that, like, 1%, and it's a big 1%, that keeps me from being fully sure because of the fact that it's Jordan Peele.
You know, this is, like, one of the few movies where I kind of, like, watch the trailer and then stop thinking about it because I kind of want to be surprised. Other things, like Marvel movies, I'm like, yeah, let's dissect all this stuff. But this, I'm like, no, I want to be surprised sitting in theater and just have it, like, unfurl in front of me.
Unfurl?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a fancy
good
word.
Vocabulary.
That is a fancy word.
I have a high school diploma.
I didn't say that. I don't know. Like, I want this movie to be great. I do. I want every bit of what Jordan Peele wants the audience to learn and understand. I want to get it, you know. I don't want to miss any part of this movie for the sake of, you know, being narrow-minded, you know? So I at the same time that I want to know more about what's going on, I really don't, because then I don't want, as cliche as it sounds, I don't want to ruin the magic, I guess, so to speak. The magic of cinema, you know, and great storytelling. I mean, he's essentially the modern-day Alfred Hitchcock in terms of mysteries and twists and turns. So, who knows?
Oh, he even did the new Twilight Zone for a bit, which I believe with that he had different storytellers be able to tell their story in the format of Twilight Zone. And there was a really good episode that I watched that dealt with deportation and immigration, which was really good because it hit the nose perfectly and it said so much.
What was that one?
For Twilight Zone, it was the one with the ice cream truck.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So, it's with the woman who was in a what was that fairy tale show on ABC?
Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. The Snow White person from Once Upon a Time.
I saw like 2 years ago that Jordan Peele was doing a Barney movie. Like that was like that. Nothing ever came of that.
That's
like,
scary.
I was interested to I'd see where it. He was I going with Barney.
I would not. I'm okay.
It was supposed to be about like the.
It's essentially
forgetting about your childhood. And Barney.
It's
going to
turn
back.
Into a FNAF story. Let's just get it right.
Exactly. Barney's going to be eating children.
So.
And I am all there for that. That sounds amazing.
Well, Nope comes out July 22nd. If you haven't gotten your tickets now, make sure you go and get those because they are going fast. But that brings us to the main conversation, the main topic of tonight's lovely soiree of guests and individuals, and that is our conversation on The Black Phone. Now, this movie has been talked about for God knows how long. This has been something that's been on the back burner of cinema since like early 2021. We've been talking about it. It's been in the mainstream media in the form of a short story by Joe Hill. So yeah, I'm excited. We're all excited. So before we get into any more, Spencer, why don't you give us the official synopsis goodness?
Finley Shaw, a shy but clever 13-year-old boy, is abducted by a sadistic killer and trapped in a soundproof basement where screaming is of little use. When a disconnected phone on the wall begins to ring, Finley discovers that he can hear the voices of the killer's previous victims, and they are dead set on making sure that what happened to them doesn't happen to Finley.
It's Finney.
Whatever.
Written and directed by Scott Derrickson, and based on the hit short story by Joe Hill, the film stars Mason Thames, Madeline McGraw, Jeremy Davies, James Ransom, and Ethan Hawke. The movie was delayed, as I mentioned earlier, from its initial January 2022 release to June 2022 due to unexpectedly great preview showings. Once Blumhouse realized just how great early reactions were, they gave it a summer release date. Another piece of information, the grabber dons several creepy masks throughout the film, each exposing different portions of his face. The mask was actually designed by legendary prosthetic makeup artist Tom Savini.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
The first time Mason Thames saw the iconic mask, he said it was terrifying, coupled with Ethan Hawke's bone-chilling performance as the grabber. So, first off, the fact of that Tom Savini, who is world-renowned for his work in creature effects, special effects, and just model making for horror movies, actually did the prosthetic for this, for that mask. That's actually really cool. If you haven't seen anything that Tom Savini has done, you could literally throw a dartboard at just about every great horror classic from the 80s, and you'd probably hit something that Tom Savini has had a hand in. So, as I mentioned, this movie was slated for an earlier release, but it was delayed because of the fact that this is what happens when you eat before you record.
I can't do that.
I thought maybe this one time I could do it. I'm getting like the stop and goes. Just like that. So the fact of the matter is that because this movie had such a overwhelmingly good response, they decided to push it to that summer blockbuster type time slot. And it's doing actually really well. A lot of people are responding to it, and a lot of people are really, you know, excited by it. And we all got a chance to see it in some form or fashion. So before we dive in, I do want to let everybody know we are going to be talking about spoilers. The fact of the matter is this short story has been out since 2000. If you haven't had a chance to read the short story, or if you haven't had a chance to see this movie already, chances are you probably don't have any intention to. So let us just give you our thoughts and let's have a good time, okay? No one needs to fight. No one needs to kill anybody. I'm looking at you, Sarah. The one
he knows what he did.
What did I do?
The one who sympathizes with psychos over there.
Stoop.
So let's talk about first film experiences. I want to talk about what it is that, obviously, as we've mentioned, Joe Hill is the son of world-renowned writer and author and film, you know, idea giver, Stephen King. I mean, he did direct, I believe, one movie, and that's, it was okay. Maximum Overdrive. I think he was on drugs when he did that, though.
I think he confirmed that he was.
No, he actually did confirm he was on drugs when he did that. Joe Hill is the son of Stephen King. Joe Hill changed his name, obviously, to not ride on the laurels of his father. And rightly so, he is doing immensely well for himself. But you can't help but like see the similarities in the writing style and even the film style that is exuded from Stephen King or his son. So I kind of want to know, what are some of your guys' Stephen King experiences? Whether if it's books, whether if it's movies, whether if it's TV series, whether if it's God knows what. I want to start with Logan. What are some of your areas where you are experienced in that aspect?
The two Stephen King movies I've seen are It and It Chapter Two. Wait, isn't blanking on the name of it, but it's Morgan Freeman.
Dreamcatcher.
No, not Dreamcatcher. They're in a prison.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, isn't that Stephen King too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, and I am currently reading through the Dark Tower series.
Mm, nice.
I'm on the fifth one.
Oh,
that's, wow. That's a ride. That's a fun series.
He was on drugs then, too.
Yep. I can tell.
It's a trend already.
It's crazy.
Hey, I mean, sometimes inspiration comes in all forms, whether if it's, in front of you or snorted. So, Spencer, what about you? What's some of your experience with Stephen King works?
I've seen a random collection of his movies from like Christine, I think, is one of the first ones I ever saw. Like,
oh, really? You've seen Christine?
Yeah, it was Saturday afternoon
cartoons.
Freaked me out because it was like the first one. I saw Dr. Sleep because we did that on the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Didn't we do The Shining together too?
Yeah, we did The Shining.
Hmm?
You did for Father's Day, I believe, or you brought it up on the Father's Day episode.
We may have. I'm not too sure. What else? Any other areas?
I did watch Maximum Overdrive. That movie is insane. So that's how I know he did drugs.
Emilio Estevez, man. I mean, you gotta...
Yeah, but that movie also contained a scene of a waitress going outside and yelling at cars. We made you! That's what she was screaming. Well, right before she died.
I mean, that's kind of the equivalent to Mark Wahlberg apologizing to a plastic plant in The Happening. So
I didn't want... now I remember that
or
scene.
Or him finding a Transformer.
Man.
That's a whole other type of, like, disappointment. Or him apparently being the one for being, celibate and not having, boom boom time with any women, so that makes him the one.
I have no idea what movie this is in reference to.
This is the last Transformers movie.
I'm so sorry. What? Yeah,
the one with
I only saw that one once, and
the
it
one
was...
with
I didn't bother because
ooh, it's something.
No. Hannibal. Hannibal Lecter.
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins is in it. He's got a very...
Sorry. I really didn't pay
great.
Any attention.
So if you...
Anthony Hopkins.
This is funny. Because if you've never seen... So you've seen it once, you said.
I saw it once and it was years ago, but it is...
The crazy thing about it is if you were to explain to somebody... I'm looking at Logan here because he's the only one who's seen it. If you were to explain to somebody the premise of this movie, do you realize how crazy ridiculous you would sound? Anthony Hopkins owns an Irish castle and has a British butler
and,
robot.
He has the Transformer from that one movie back in the 80s that was the original one, but he's French now.
But he's French now, that's right. And he has a sword that only works for the Chosen One, which was passed down from the Autobots who were around during the time of Merlin and the Knights of the Round Table.
Which isn't a real thing from the series, by the way.
And Merlin, Merlin is played by Stanley Tucci.
I believe I did see this movie, but I had the flu.
You got the flu from the movie, let's just say.
Magic is real in this universe?
Yeah.
No, he has a staff that was made by the Transformers.
Oh, and there's a piece of the stone or the whatever power.
Also, Unicron is Earth.
Also, this movie is on Paramount Plus, if you care to watch it, which I am now watching it.
And then you have little J-Lo, as Mark Wahlberg calls her, show up in the beginning of the scene and then disappear, and you don't see her again. And apparently, Mark Wahlberg is the chosen one because he hasn't had sex in years, which makes him apparently the prime, you know, component for the sword to work. And then he joins his sword with the other Autobot swordsman, and they fight Unicron and Megatron and all the bad people in this aerial fight. And Optimus Prime is in the movie in the first 10 minutes, and at the movie at the end of the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He's the Jeff Goldblum of Fallen Kingdom. He's only in there for the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes.
So this trailer is playing in like the background. I can't hear it, but it looks like there's those robots that walk on two legs from RoboCop.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The only good part about that movie was that Frank
the
Welker
ending when it's done.
Was when Frank Welker voiced Megatron. Only good part. My G1 nerd brain was like, "Oh my god, it's him."
Yeah, we definitely went down that rabbit trail.
Interesting. I'm very happy about this now.
I don't know why we started talking about that, but Maximum Overdrive. You saw Maximum Overdrive, lady yelling. I don't know how we got to that, but either way.
Because it was about cars and moving cars. You bring the Transformers at some point.
I don't like those movies. They're just like...
Bumblebee was the only good one. And
it's not even done by Michael Bay.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with it.
What about you, Sarah? What's your area of experience in... Oh my God, this child's about to blow up.
I think she has some crack before we started recording.
Yeah.
Whole line. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a minor. So, I've seen...
I'm glad I was able to finish my sentence. Go ahead, Sarah. Take it away.
So, I've seen Castle Rock. So, I've seen all the seasons for Castle Rock. I've seen The Running Man, Dr. Sleep, The Shining, Carrie...
Which, yes, by the way, The Running Man is a short story from Stephen King.
Stand By Me, The It with Tim Curry, It Chapter 1, It Chapter 2. I haven't seen Green Mile. I haven't seen Cujo. I'm missing one.
You're missing a few, but it's okay. I mean,
no, ones that I haven't seen. Because
ones that you haven't seen, because I don't even think you've said all the ones you have seen.
No, I said the ones I have seen.
You didn't see Dr. Sleep. I mean, you didn't say Dr. Sleep.
I said Dr. Sleep.
Did you?
Yeah, I just go super fast. Dr. Sleep's my favorite movie.
Okay. You're literally like vibrating
Obi-Wan
in your
chair. Yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi as Danny. Like,
okay.
So good.
You good?
No.
I mean, there's a ton of movies. I mean, you take the short stories out of, like, from Creepshow.
No, this is not one!
You take the short stories that were put into both the TV series and the movies. Not to mention like all the other ones, like The Stand. You got Hearts in Atlantis with Sir Anthony Hopkins. You got a lot. So is that the last movie that you're aware of from or that you've seen from Stephen King?
Last thing I know of Stephen King, or last thing I've seen?
That you've experienced.
Oh, yeah. The current one I'm going through is The Stand, which is really long, but I like it so far because it's pretty.
My dad is reading that. I should probably read it at some point.
That book is long. I read that book twice, and I won't ever read it again because it took me weeks.
The Fifth Dark Tower is like 24, 25 hours long.
But I've read those.
Yeah, Stephen King just writes, his books are long.
Mm-hmm. That's the way the man works.
Yep. And he loves what he's doing.
He does.
A lot of what I've seen from Stephen King, I mean, you're looking at just about every film, every made-for-TV film, you know, everything from his horror to his drama.
None of his fantasy books have... I'm so sorry. I'm so excited. There's also Dolores and Claiborne, I believe.
Dolores Claiborne. Not Dolores and Claiborne. This isn't a Bonnie and Clyde. You know.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, there's a Dolores Claiborne. I mean, you have Misery that you didn't mention. You know, there's, like I mentioned, Hearts in Atlantis, which is essentially a spiritual sequel, if you will, to The Green Mile, which actually has a really young Anton Yelchin in it, like baby Anton Yelchin. And then the TV ones, which obviously, like It, you have Rose Red, you have, what was the name of that manor? There was one about the actual building itself. There was a whole series on it. And then you had the modern, more recent interpretation of The Shining that Stephen King has actually come out and said he liked better. And then my favorite of the Stephen King movies, actually, I think it's one of the better ones even from out of the movies that were done in theaters. It's Storm of the Century, which Storm of the Century is a really great one. If you've seen, have you seen Chronicles of Riddick?
No, I have not.
Otra vez. Did you see Thor the Dark World?
Yes, I did.
So the head elf, if you will, the main elf, that guy plays a entity that goes into this town while one of the biggest storms is happening on that little, you know, seaside town. And he goes in, he literally murders an old lady and waits for the cops to come and get him. And then he lets the cops take him so that way they can take him to where everyone else is at since the storm is happening. And then he essentially reveals that, like, he knows everybody's secrets and he can tell everybody's secrets because this is a town that's filled with them. And in that one movie, there's references to, like, Derry. There's references to the town where Dolores Claiborne is from. There's all these references all over the place in this one. It's a really good one. So, and then, of course, obviously, like, the Castle Rock series was good.
That's so good.
There's a lot that you can derive from, like, Stephen King. And the thing is that as much as Joe Hill has worked to kind of separate himself from his dad in terms of not working off of his, you know, his own merit and whatnot, there's still a lot of similarities there, like in terms of writing style, in terms of how he, you know, creates the worlds that he's building, how he pursues, like, the villains and creating the full character of him. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit as we dive into our first impression. So as soon as the movie was over, as soon as you guys went to go see the film and you walked out of the theater, what were some of your first impressions? I want to start with Sarah. Without giving away your review of the film, just like intern Amy does, because she does that sometimes, and you're in her seat. So don't dirty it. Oh my God.
No, you're making me worry about that. I'm glad I stay inside because I fear kidnapping.
Okay. Interesting take.
You said without going to spoilers, I mean, and details.
Okay,
Spencer, answer the question. It's just not what anyone was expecting.
Yeah, Spencer, why don't you go ahead and give us your first impression?
Okay, so, like, going into this movie, I wasn't sure, like, really what to expect, mm-hmm. So I kind of had low expectations. Came out really impressed. I was like, this is a lot better than I was expecting mm-hmm. upon entering the theater.
Yeah, I agree. What about you, Logan?
Ethan Hawke reminded me of Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's one way to put it. There you go.
Just, he made me so uneasy. The seabirds went slow.
Oh, my gosh. Sarah, do you want a round two on telling us your first impression?
Ethan Hawke does an amazing, amazing character and scares me.
Okay.
He's terrifying.
My first impression right out the theater, right out the gate, I've been excited about this movie for some time. I've been wanting to try to fit it into the schedule, but haven't really had the opportunity to, just because so much is happening in terms of theater, in terms of cinema, and there seems to be something new and popping and more, like, mainstream attention grabbing. So, and we want to remain relevant, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to lose some of, you know, the roots of who we are. Mm. And this was one of those movies that I had read the short story a while back, and I was super excited about it. And the short story is good. It's not that long. You know, it's a few chapters, but it's wonderful, and it's super brilliant, and it feels like a true-to-form horror classic story that you feel like you may have grown up with it, but at the same time, it's set in a very... It feels like it's a very modern, like, way of writing, if that makes sense. Like, it obviously takes place during the 70s, but it feels refreshing. It feels new. It feels, you know... And that was part of the, you know, going into this movie and walking out of it, first impressions is like, it didn't disappoint. You know, it was not at all disappointing. It didn't fall short. It held to what I had expected for the film adaptation of the short story to be, and it actually kind of surpassed that. So I was actually really excited we got a chance to see it. And this is transitioning over into like the performances, because I feel like if ever there was somebody to really kind of get good credit for in terms of how their performance was, it was Mason Thames, the boy who plays Finney. I think it's Thames, but it could be Thames. T-H-A-M-E-S.
Thomas.
Thames. You know.
It's famous.
He was great. I have to admit. He was great, and his... as odd as it sounds, his chemistry and just juxtaposition with Ethan Hawke's, you know, character, the Grabber, they actually work really, really well off together. And I think it actually looked really great. What are you looking at over there, Spence? You over there kind of eyeballing and something going off on that.
No, I'm sorry. I was just like looking over the actresses. And I actually want to say, I feel like most of the kid actors did a fantastic job in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, usually there's always one kid who's like, Billy forgot his lines again. But like in this one, like, no, I liked all the kids. All the kids did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I didn't want to like just dive into that because I felt like it was something that like wanted to, but you're right. Like 100%, just to kind of call it as it is, from every bully to every, you know, B kid character to every main kid character, every single child in this movie was on their game. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but that is a lot of what gives me the indication that, you know, Joe Hill is pulling from his like lineage, if you will, or whatever chemistry, brain chemistry that he has, that his father has. Because his, if there's anybody out there who can do an incredible, you know, coming of age, you know, bringing your friend community together type story or movie, it's Stephen King. Mm-hmm. We've seen this time and time again, whether if it's Stand By Me, whether if it's, you know, It, you know, They're Back, whatever it is, whatever it may be, a lot of these movies have that same vein. And with this film, I mean, the best part of this movie is that every single kid actor was on point, and none of it felt subpar, I guess is the right word to say. What do you think, Logan?
I really thought the kid actors were all really good, and everyone was on their A game. Stephen King, even with the Dark Tower kind of writing Jake's story through all that, I thought just kind of showing how, you know, he just writes kids really good. Yeah,
he does. What about you, Sarah? What do you think?
I have to agree with both of you on the children acting. None of them felt out of place. They literally brought to the table what was needed and did so much with it. I really liked the person who played Robin.
He was good too,
his chemistry with Finney was amazing, and yeah. It was amazing, and it was a true friendship. And spoiler alert, when Robin was taken, there was that heavy impact of you understood their relationship and his relationship with Finney.
Yeah. I wanted a kung fu fight scene with the Grabber. Like, I wanted him to fight him.
No, I have to agree 100%. I feel like Robin was probably one of the best ways to transition the amount of separation from the imminent danger and the people we knew to creating that transition, that he was like that bridge to recognizing this is a real threat, to the point where Finny gets taken. Like, Robin is that, and he makes a great engaging character, because he's not only is he probably the best friend to our main, you know, protagonist, but he's also a great sense of scale when it comes to power and toughness, I guess, if you want to say, of your main antagonist, your main villain. Because if Robin can't beat him, and we saw Robin take down somebody who was like four times his size, then you know that this person is somebody who is strong or just crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's part of that recognition of how much danger this situation is. And it's crazy how you have those unique characters who give you a sense of scale in your world. They give you a sense of, you know, this is Joseph. Joseph, you know, knows how to throw a knife and hit a board like 12 yards away, and he does these things, and he's super smart, and he knows how to, you know, break out of straitjackets or do, I don't know, whatever. He's into Houdini. I don't know. And then he gets taken, or he gets kidnapped, or he gets put into situations that are very, very bad for him. And if he doesn't make it out, then it puts that scale to you that, well, if so-and-so couldn't do it, there's no way in the world I could do it. And it just creates that mindset as a viewer, as an audience member, you know, that this is not going to be an easy situation. Mm-hmm. So, but great point.
I have one more. Also regarding him as a character in the short story, in place of him was Bruce Umada. And I felt for having Robin for the movie fit so well with, because in the book we had Bruce in place of where Robin was, and it had more impact and gravitas regarding the scene where he has to fill the phone, and he's talking to Robin, and he's walking him through the steps, because in the book it's kind of just Bruce going and you fill it up with sand and you're going, and then it was kind of like I don't want to use the word winged it on attacking the grabber, but it
seemed a little bit more or less planned out in terms of the strategy of it, as opposed to just creating a club.
Yeah.
You know, because like in the book, you know, Bruce, so in the movie, Finny speaks to about four different children on the phone. In the book, it's just Bruce. There's no other child, right? Because it's just
no. There's about two. There's Bruce, and then I believe the paper boy. Because
that's right.
He said he was unnamed in that one, and he was just describing things.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different in the book and compared to the movie. But this is one of those opportunities in this era or this universe, like with Scott Derrickson, to see how to create a much more unique universe and more expanded. Because I feel like there was, with the fact that they go more into each individual person's or each individual victim's, you know, psyche and mindset in the film, it creates a much more like bandedness of like, I guess, spirits, or bandedness of working together with who is there and who, you know, who's still alive kind of thing. There's just a lot more to it that feels like a sense of camaraderie, even if it's with ghosts. Mm-hmm. You know, which oddly enough, his collection of the short stories is called 20th Century Ghosts. Mm-hmm. So that's funny. Was there anybody else you guys wanted to highlight? Any other performer?
Oh, yes. Madeline McGraw, who played Gwen.
Yes.
Yeah. She did Little Sister really awesome, and also had the best like yell out at Jesus that I've seen in a movie.
Yes.
I felt that one personally. Like, I've been there.
It was so good. It was she did so well in balancing innocence with like pre-teenage frustration. Mm-hmm. You know, it was great, and I felt like she was such a breath of fresh air in terms of young actresses. Because most of the time when you have a young girl who's trying to be an actress in a movie, you have somebody who is, you know, either working way too hard to look older, you have somebody who's working way too hard to look this way or to do these things, or the opposite. You have somebody who's completely playing a dumbed down role. Somebody's like, "Ooh, mama," or whatever. Like, you get something so infantile. And she plays that role, straddling that line so well between both being a young girl and a frustrated preteen, and it works out great, which is exactly where you two are, Sarah.
Yes.
Yes.
She's not even paying attention because I called her a preteen and she's like, huh?
Oh, I'm a teen.
Something. No, I think she's really great. I feel like a lot of the scenes where she was like really emotionally emoting were super raw and real. Like, no kidding. That scene where she's getting like the crap beat out her because she, you know, because of the situation in the film where the cops end up coming to her because she sees things in visions, and she said something to the Yamada's youngest daughter, and they ended up telling their parents, and the parents told the police, and the police went to the school to see Gwen, and then apparently the police also went to Gwen's dad's work, who Gwen's dad, played by Jeremy Davies, is a drunkard and is a widower because his wife is no longer here. You find this abrupt, like, one morning, like a Saturday morning, where he is beating the snot out of Gwen, and those tears and the way she, like, the evolution, and this might be just more into the intelligence of this little girl, but her ability to transition from like just crazy sad angry to just being angry to being frustrated angry was like, no, there are certain adult actors that I've seen that can't even do that, and she does it so well.
She does it seamlessly. Like, mm-hmm. That scene was like, it looked super, like, it sounds kind of weird for me to say, but super authentic. And it just felt super authentic.
That's no, all it did. Say. It felt super authentic. It felt like she was actually getting beat because those, like, her face, I know I've made that face when I was a kid. Like, and that was because I was getting real beat, like, with the belt and everything. Like, but then I was a, you know, horrible kid. Like, those tears and the way her face looked was like, yeah, I've seen that before. That is real. And I don't know if you guys know, like, there's, what's his name? The director of Stand By Me.
I don't know that one off.
Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner he actually yelled at the kids at times, so that way he could help them get into character. Especially, there's the scene where, has everybody here seen Stand By Me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there's the scene where they're trying to run to get off of the train tracks before they get hit, because the train track is over, like, is a bridge over this huge river. And Gordy and what's the other boy's name? I forget the kid's name.
I forget their names.
From Stand By Me.
Chris?
No, Chris is the other guy.
I forgot to mention I had seen that.
Vern,
there it is. Vern. Where Gordy and Vern are running across the thing, and Vern is like in tears, and he's crying like big old crocodile tears, and then Gordy, played by one Will Wheaton, is just like, he's streaming tears and everything. Apparently, they were having trouble getting them to emote properly, and apparently Rob Reiner ended up like just yelling at them on set, making them almost burst into tears. And he's like, "Okay, use this," and he starts filming the scene, and they start doing it, and then that's the scene you get in the movie. I pray that's not what happened in this movie.
I pray not. It's not like a Shelley Duvall type of situation.
No.
That's worse.
But she does such a great job in this movie. I really do hope that we get a lot more opportunities to see her. really traverse into something great as a performer. She's really something else, and I really hope to see more of her in movies to come. But in terms of the story, talking about story-wise, how did you guys feel about the flow of the story or even the buildup of the story? Sarah?
I actually quite enjoyed it. So prior to walking into the theaters, I just finished the short story on Audible. And it, like you said, it expounded on it and it added things that felt super, like super whole, and that was not like necessary, but it expounded on it. Like the ending for the short story, it ended much differently than the movie. In the short story, spoiler alert if you're going to go read the story, Finney's being up the grabber, and also I don't remember if it, in the movie they name dropped the actual name and identity of the grabber, but his name's Albert. But he's beating Albert with the phone and it starts ringing and he holds it up and he goes, "It's for you," and that's where it ends. Versus with the movie, he puts it to him and then it's all the victim's voices, which I love that as a added detail for it. And it didn't just end with that. It ended with Finney getting out, being reunited with his dad and his sister. And it just felt super full, and what was needed, not needed, but what was filling. Okay. That's all I'm going to say for now.
It's true. Like I really do feel like this story does pace itself well. It doesn't do too much where it's like, okay, you literally just told us all the entire movie in this short, you know, little span of time. It gave us so much exposition. This movie's only an hour and 40 minutes long, an hour 43 to be precise, but it feels like the story just takes its time to unravel. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we don't get rushed with each voice that we get, each disembodied voice on the phone. It's not like a boom and then it's the next thing and you never hear from the last person. There's space given. There's room for, you know, expansive growth for the sister's role. You understand even where the father's coming from. There's a lot that's going on in this movie that it's very well spaced out and it's very well given its due time to grow as the film progresses. Even one of the things that I didn't think I would ever have any compassion for in this film, because it feels a little kind of formulaic, I feel like, to an extent, the cops in the beginning of this movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like at the beginning, the very like bad cop, good cop, except they forgot the good cop. And they're just like, whatever,
bad cop,
you know,
good cop, but we're all at a good cop.
There you go. and in this one, it's like even their role in this movie, even their silent progression gives room for you to cheer for them as they're trying to find, you know, Finney and this bad person who is abducting kids. What do you think, Spence, of the story element?
Honestly, like, this movie feels so much shorter than it actually is. Like, for me, because, like, it felt like I sit down and then I was already leaving. Because, like, they did such a good job of, like, just making sure, like, you know, everything had a time to, like, shine. And then, like, there was just a whole bunch of space for, like, everything to just, you know, like, be there and be, like, you know, in the moment. And, you know, I really like that.
Yeah. What about you, Logan? How'd you feel?
The plot flowed extremely fluently. Mm. And what you were saying about the cops, I was really honestly expecting the whole, oh, you're just a little girl, you don't know anything. But I was very pleasantly surprised when they did not go with that trope. And the cops were actually like, this might be something to look at.
Hmm. Yeah.
I also had a problem with how quick the cops were like, I don't have an idea. Let's ask this girl for some psychic help.
It was the 70s, okay? You never know. I mean, they were. I mean, there's literally mediums on TV that they go to, that police go to right now.
Yeah, there are for some reason.
I also love the principal scene where she's in the office with them. She's like, what do you think? Did I take the grab? Am I the grabber? Yeah, I took Bruce. Yeah. He's so much taller than me. And me, a little girl, just, you know, took him. Black balloons. I can drive. Like...
It was very, that felt a lot more like natural than some of the other children's scenes that we've seen with that particular actress, with the girl who plays
Gwen.
Sorry, why did I lose her name? I almost called her Madeline, but isn't that her?
That's her actual name.
Like the girl who plays Madeline. Like, oh, she plays herself. Whoa, Madeline, whatever. The story has a very unique aspect to it in terms of that whole coming of age idea, and we mentioned that with Stephen King, and how Stephen King is one of the biggest masters of bringing in the horror element to a coming of age story. With what we had mentioned earlier with your guys' knowledge of the Stephen King universe, do you see any parallels with this one to any other movie he's done previous?
Like, this is hard to really describe because they're very different. But kind of in Stand By Me, even though, like, it's like one is a group of kids that are alive and one is a group of kids that are mostly dead. I kind of feel like there's still that connection. Like, even though it's all like in this movie, it's just all connected to Finney and trying to help him get out. I still get that, like,
Coraline type vibe.
What?
Coraline type vibe. With the three girl ghosts and them being like, go find her eyes.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like that.
I want my eyes.
my eye rights.
You got all these people like trying to help you get out of like this stupid situation that you've been abducted into.
I don't think he did it on purpose, so.
I didn't and say.
Just, yeah, little kid got himself kidnapped. dumb kids these days.
Kids. Not watching the road.
I mean,
why would you help a random man who dropped his stuff on the sidewalk?
Like, he should have looked at his face. It was all white. It, like, no. No. He said he was a magician in white makeup.
In the book, in the short story, he actually does, like, a trick, and he engages.
So he pulls out a can of wasp spray, and he goes, I can do a magic trick. And he starts shaking, and I'm literally reading, and I'm like, oh, no, no. And he's just I have a lemon.
I think he did actually say in this movie, you want to see a magic trick? And then he just attempted to throw him into the van.
Abduction. I don't like it.
Yeah. I'm going to make you disappear.
And now your life has disappeared.
Not Fresh Prince of Bel-Air type this.
No.
Now this is a story all about how my life got turned upside down.
Oh my gosh.
That's a story for Will Byers and Will Byers only.
This is what happens when we have the junior film loss.
Junior film loss. In terms of the story element, do you guys feel like Joe Hill does a better job of scaling that whole victory for young people kind of thing, as opposed to like things like from It, things from like Stand By Me? Do you feel like Joe Hill is in the same like arena as his dad, or do you feel like it's just like an entirely different sport altogether, or does he do it better?
I don't know. I kind of feel like, best way to put it, it's a sidestep. Like, it's like right there, but like it's like over here.
Yeah. Because it feels like it's still in the same.
Very similar.
Exactly. What do you think, Sarah?
I have to agree. Joe Hill did a good job tackling the topic of kidnapping and abduction so well, and I believe Stephen King tackles it, and it's so well done where you read it and you feel like you're reading something Stephen King wrote, but like another step, and I nearly went very original, and that's why I appreciate it, because I can see some aspects and some things that Joe picked up on. It was like, I'm going to add a little bit of, sorry for hitting the mic. I'm going to add a little bit of this that my dad didn't hear. He goes, but I'm going to bring this in and this aspect. And I really liked, even though it wasn't like a whole bunch of description, but how he described the way Albert moved, and that, like everything, the book is much the movie is much different than the book. I really enjoyed the aspect of the mask. That was a really good addition to add. And I don't know with that if it was the director or the director came with Tom Savini's mask and was like, "What do you think, Joe?" And Joe's like, "Yes, that one." But if so, it was so well done and so well executed that if Joe described that in the short story, I would be like, "Yeah, yeah, scary. Let's go." Yeah, that's what I think.
Big there you scare. Go.
So, before we wrap this up, I got a junior filmlosopher roundtable question. We got some youngins here, so I want your guys' thoughts. Here's the roundtable question. You are the last child the grabber killed. Give me your best advice to Finny in order for him to stay alive.
I like how you guys already died.
No, yeah, you guys were not Finny. You guys totally bit the bullet.
No, for sure. I would not be able to fight him. I would be dead.
We've already established, like, outside of recording that, like, neither me nor, I nearly called you your handle, sorry, Logan have will be able to kind of survive a slasher movie.
I would be dead.
I would be inside I'm first my dead. House.
I love Friday the 13th, but I'd be dead first.
Logan's like, I go before the minority, Spencer. I die.
I take the bullet for them.
He goes, killing black folk and Mexicans. Nope, you got me first here, buddy. So, all right. So you guys, and this is for everybody. You guys are the last person that the grabber kills. Give me your best advice to Finny before, or in order for him to stay alive. So go ahead, Sarah, you first, since you're over here miming stuff. And
I didn't want to go first.
Advice you give.
I don't give that best advice. And when life-threatening situations, it would just be me. Well, here's the thing. Book.
Life's not threatening you because you've lost it already.
Someone else's life being threatened situation, I wouldn't be the best.
She's like, have you seen My Hero Academia?
I'm going to need you to yell at him. Like Bakugo.
And say, just go up to his face and say, I am here.
You're going to need to style your hair into giant. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
don't die. Don't die. Don't die. We
That was good.
We're in the middle of filming. Don't die.
Don't die. I wouldn't be able to give the best advice, but it would be more aware of your surroundings.
Don't get kidnapped again, idiot.
Or maybe that's the way out of the situation. Yeah, get kidnapped again.
You see that window? You're going to want to get kidnapped through that window right there.
Really quick. Tell him, I bet you couldn't kidnap me and take me outside.
Be on trip, let's go.
All right. What about you, Logan?
I don't know.
Come on.
When
you get this one phone call, you can't ask for a pizza.
Domino's?
Hey, this Domino's?
It's like, if Finny picks up, how are you going to help me? Did you see the rubber bands for my braces on the floor?
I left him there. He kind of ripped them out.
Have you seen my Steve Harrington pop? He's lost. Return, please.
Please help my son. He is lost.
All right. What about what's your advice?
Honestly, yeah. Don't get kidnapped again.
Mine is just being aware of your surroundings. Like,
surroundings? You're in a basement.
You can hear his like footsteps going down the stairs.
It's soundproof.
Oh yeah. So that
you can hear outside, but they can't hear you.
I don't even know.
I guess. Okay. Wait.
Be aware of your surroundings.
Why? I don't know. I don't know how to fight.
Is this like Inception? Is there like a kidnapper inside the kidnapping?
Leonardo DiCaprio is going to come out of the wall and start talking about Inception. The wall's going to start
just
folding over.
Bust in and be like, I found you. You're not taken.
Go ahead,
You're
Logan.
Found.
I have a very particular set of skills.
No, I guess I don't know how to fight, but I guess I would say like make a weapon or something. Or, like, because he found, like, all the... Well, he broke his legs.
Yeah. And
using the hole. I guess I would have told him to do that. Make the hole. Make that
like,
hole.
Finney's like,
break his legs.
That guy already told me that. Well,
yeah.
Just, well, look. Okay,
so I'm
man,
stealing
look.
The advice of other dead children.
Look, I'm doubling down on what he said, okay?
I'm making sure you remember.
I'm not like, really good at this. I am recent ghost, okay? Can you just like not call me out? Thanks, man.
It's like when two friends go to a birthday party and only one has a gift. I'm like, oh yeah, that's from both of us.
No one looks at you like, what?
This advice is from both of us. Like, dude, yeah, I don't even know you. You died like 3 weeks after I did. It's like,
this is like when you have like an essay due and you're like, ah, I didn't do this. So you like steal your friend's essay and you're just like rewording stuff on it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. All the time. All right. Well,
I don't. I forgot someone actually said to do that.
Okay. So the two pieces of advice, just so I'm clear, are check your surroundings in the basement and
defend
with
yourself,
nothing, and then steal other people's advice.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Spence. What about you?
Mine was don't get kidnapped.
That would have to imply that you're going to actually get out.
No, like
that's like escape without the extra steps, like without actually knowing what's happening in between.
You don't know if someone's gonna break into this house and then
double
like, kidnap.
Now I'm picturing. Imagine he puts the phone to Ethan Hawke's head, and it's just someone just going,
"Could you stop kidnapping, please? It's really mean." We're very sensitive, and we're children.
Oh my god!
This is really insulting. Could you stop taking your shirt off and sitting on a chair in the middle of the kitchen?
There you go.
I would say, like, if I didn't say check your surroundings, he goes watch body language. But that sounds super creepy.
Watch body language.
Body language.
Yeah. What are you gonna watch?
Like, because the man
listen,
was like,
Ursula, we get it, but that's not what we do here. Okay, watching body language.
That makes no sense.
I mean, okay, so regarding, like...
You know, you're messing up this kid more and more if he escapes. He's going to be out in the real world and he's going to be staring at people like, what are you doing? A ghost told me to watch for body language.
I mean, the way... Well, okay, never mind. I would say the way... Never mind. It sounds more creepy the way I was going to say it.
I'm going to watch your body language.
Coming from somebody who, you know, relates to serial killers, yeah, I would say
it
so.
It was the Chucky show that maybe he was...
Again, I mentioned... Stew from Scream. Stop trying to justify it.
No,
you can't.
I'm not trying to justify it. I'm saying that, yes, he is a bad man.
But?
Why is there a but?
Why is there a but? How many times do I have to tell you? He was in on the whole thing, and he had no remorse. You cannot justify it. Stop trying to.
I'm not trying to justify it. I'm just saying.
Okay, but whenever you keep continuing, though.
You keep continuing and saying, but. Okay, look, I know it's Shaggy, but still.
It wasn't me. No, not that Shaggy.
Like, man.
I mean, I don't have any sympathy for him after seeing She's All That, so. That's where I draw the line.
Okay, I'd like to also point out he is not playing the same character.
I know. Across
the continuum.
But now I can
she's
look
like,
at him differently.
But she's like, I will not besmirch that stew, but I will totally trash that other guy.
So, that other guy? Terrible.
Okay, since all y'all have ridiculous things to say,
okay.
Mr. Advice if he escapes, Madam, you know,
no,
socially
my
aware.
Was while he was in the basement.
So. How's he gonna get kidnapped again in the basement?
Because, dude, what happens if there's a home invasion?
Kool-Aid Man comes in. Just
you're gonna bang on every door to get taken so that you can get out of there.
Home invasion happens in the middle of that. Just like, hey,
what
is
this? Like the Sticky
Tom.
Bandits come in and it's like turns into a PG-13 movie.
Hey,
all of a sudden,
hey, Mom, there's a kid down here.
No, all of a sudden you're like taken, you're knocking out, and then like you wake up, you're in a bathtub, and someone's like, I want to play a game. A completely different set of nonsense.
So then how are you going to stop that one?
I don't know.
So then
check
your advice is moot. Check your surroundings.
I mean, there's also the Goonies
different
kidnapping scene. With,
different kind
with
of kidnapping. The Jedi come in.
Hey, kid. You want to learn the Force? It's pretty cool.
Hello there.
Okay. Since...
All right, you got a real one? Let's hear it.
No, I thought
yeah.
I did. And
no,
my
we
brain's
hear yours.
You can't well, be like, okay, well, okay, your guesses okay. are terrible.
What advice that's, can we give me, that they
I'm
have
sorry,
already given?
Miss socially aware over here.
I have social anxiety. I have
Mister,
to watch everyone.
I'm going to take other people's ghostly advice.
Okay, look.
And
right.
you giving advice for people that
everyone,
doesn't even count.
Everyone had already given good advice. What do you follow up with? Teach him how to fight, and then you can defend yourself. You just reiterate that.
No, I mean, you find a way to... There's more. I mean, you could have said... Take that steel panel and use it as a shield to hold on to,
no,
so you don't
that's
get.
That's perfect where it is. He broke
exactly.
his leg. He couldn't get
that
out.
Broke his leg.
That was the actual one in the window. I'm talking yeah. about the one from the back of the freezer.
He couldn't get that out.
He did take it
he
out.
Did.
He was in the freezer.
He used the little thing from the toilet and was.
Use that as a shield.
Or
that was a thin that, piece
or,
of sheet metal.
I would have said, "Don't listen to Robin. He's an idiot." Don't grab the phone. Just take the toilet lid and swing that bad boy. Because yeah, it's like that's solid porcelain. Heck, you could take off the toilet seat and ram him over the head
it.
A couple times.
You could choke him with
the
toilet
wall
seat.
With it and it yeah. broke open.
Yeah. And it's still in one piece.
I'm going to be real honest. I was questioning that. I was like, porcelain's that strong? That
it is. Spencer, okay. how many times have you sat on your toilet and never once thought about actually it breaking when you sat down?
Okay.
Like many, I guess.
Has it?
I had my no. sleep medicine well, then, and yes. that didn't work well. I
the was, shield. Is this the shield.
Oh, wait, hold on. What does sleep medicine have to do with porcelain?
I was very, very half awake and I thought I wasn't in the bathroom. I thought it was somewhere else. I thought I was reliving
okay.
it.
The
okay, I'm. She's the, in tears over there. By the way,
the thin yeah. piece of sheet metal that he ripped off the wall wouldn't work as a shield. That man had an axe, and he threw it into his own brother's head. I don't think he would have any problem throwing an axe through sheet metal. That
possibly.
Was a very thin piece of metal.
But you don't know. It's a, probably a lot easier to swing or throw at him. And not to mention the porcelain
catch
thing.
Catch this!
Exactly.
You want it?
Ninja
go
store.
Get it.
All right, wrapping
my wallet. Go get it.
Wrapping this whole thing up since we're just getting ridiculous, and we are ridiculous.
Get it. We've been here for a while.
Let's go ahead and go around the table. I want to start with Spence. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
This movie passes for me. I really enjoyed myself. The acting in it is great. All the kids did fantastic. The story is great. Also, Ethan Hawke, terrifying. Don't yeah. want to ever see him.
Complete juxtaposition of what we've seen in Moon Knight.
Basically, as the more recent. Whenever you see a man, a magician with face paint on the side of a street,
just
whenever never
you see
anybody
any man
with face paint.
By a van.
With a mask on and a very smooth body shirtless. Because that man did not have any hair.
He didn't.
I looked at him like there's got to be an issue here.
Because
like,
in the short story, he was slightly hairy, and he was
yeah.
like what
nope.
you expected of a...
smooth.
This,
stop saying the word
this
smooth.
This man's body looked like it was freshly shaven by the gods.
Yeah.
Like, there was no
he's taking,
razor burn.
He's taking shaving lessons from Kratos' chest.
Right? So...
yeah, I'm going to give it 4 monocles. It's fantastic.
Hi.
Go ahead and give us your thoughts, sir.
This movie passes. Can we stop? This movie passes for me. The only man I trust with a van is Mr. Greg. He can single let me drive my van into your heart. Pizza Bolt.
What?
Did you just say Pizza Bolt?
Why are you trying to talk about vans again? This movie does not have a good connotation of vans.
I tried to make it positive with Steven Universe.
What?
You haven't seen the show, I can't.
Yeah, no, I know. I've seen enough of it, but like, I've seen enough to know that his dad drives a van, but like, what?
And one of his songs
okay.
is Let Me Drive My Van
okay.
into New York.
Okay.
I mean, that could be.
That could be conceived
that could
many
be
different ways.
Like
yeah,
a,
exactly.
Yeah, a
I'm going to run you
of,
over with my van.
Yeah.
Vehicular
That's where
manslaughter.
We added into it.
Go ahead, Sarah. Keep going.
So this movie. Go ahead. I know I'm crying, but I'm staying very serious in this moment. I am trying to carry through.
All right, you can do it. I believe in you.
This movie has. You go, sis. Go, bestie.
You got this. I'm gonna go.
That was Logan, by the way. I don't know how that voice came out of this boy, but.
Okay, this movie passes for me. I really enjoyed the acting, the story, how it was well thought out and well presented, and I really appreciated Robin as a character and him being an addition to the movie. And I also appreciated that I need to see other works of James, the person who plays the brother. Because the only thing I've seen him in is another Eddie who dies.
Desperate. There you go. What about you, Logan?
I thought all the performances were amazing and everyone did a great job.
And does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
It definitely passes. It is a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Nice. Let's see if we can gather ourselves here with this last hurrah. Sarah.
I didn't even give it a monocle. I just went, yep.
Would you like to now?
Go ahead.
5 out of 5.
All right.
Okay.
Would
are you,
you
good?
Like your monocle?
This is such a mess. Hey, look, yeah. I'm only starting up for the death battle, okay? I was promised one.
It's true. Well, let me go ahead and wrap this whole thing up. This
promise a death battle.
There was. I don't know. I mean, I step away for 5 seconds, and apparently the other room in the studio is already dressed up to look like a wrestling match. I don't know. Sarah's already putting on her leotard onesie and putting on face paint. So I don't know.
I'm the trash man. I throw trash into the room. For me, I eat trash.
The film passes for me. It's definitely a great work from Joe Hill. I've read so many of other Joe Hill's works, including the entire storyline of What's in 20th Century Ghosts. I've read a few of his comics. He's got a great eye and a great ear for creating right situations for incredible senses of horror without it being too much. I do enjoy his writings, and I do enjoy this movie, and I do hope to see more like it. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. This is definitely one of the better works that I've seen in horror this year so far, and I can't wait to see what else is in store. Yeah, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 alleged episodes for you to listen to, everything from anything that you're looking for. If you're looking for something in terms of in the movies, we probably got it. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out on anywhere where you are streaming podcasts. That is iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora. Tune in. You can tune into each and every one of those places. You can check us out there. Subscribe to our podcast. Give us a follow. Listen to what we got. Hey, if you're feeling generous, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it. You can also check us out on the socials over at Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. I did announce that we were going to be doing a giveaway. We are going to be giving away something really special for the month of July, and that is a custom-made box VHS box artwork for the new film that had just recently come out, The Batman. I was able to get a copy of one from a good friend who is creating these from her website, and we got one to show. So you will be sending pictures. We'll be posting pictures about it as soon as the episode drops. You'll be able to see it. And yeah, in order to enter, all you need to do is follow us and then tag under that post that you followed and you listened, and you'll be automatically entered into the drawing at the end of the month. So we'll probably be doing the drawing on the last day of July, which on the last day of July, Spencer and I will be doing a Harry Potter trivia at the local Sacramento's own There and Back Cafe and Game. So if you're local to the Sacramento area, check it out. But yeah, so that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. I'm so thankful that both y'all, the Junior Filmlosophers, came and added your silly nonsense and awesome insight. So yeah, thank you both.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you for inviting me again.
Thank you for letting me in.
I thought I wasn't let back in.
Please stop locking the door.
You both are always welcome at a distance. So again, we thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Logan.
Class dismissed.